Welcome once again to Saturday Java with Jason. I am Jason Coffee Man. This is where we meet with guests, drink coffee, and just have a great conversation.
I'm here with Tyler. He's an author, filmmaker. He does a book called Breaking In. It's available on audio, hardcover, ebook. So I'm going to turn the time over to him. And he's going to give you an introduction of what he is and what he's about and all that.
Hi, thanks, Jason, for the time. My name is Tyler Schwanke. I am a author. My first book came out May of 2023. It's titled Breaking In. It's a coming-of-age comic caper about a young filmmaker, Millie Blomquist, out of Fargo, North Dakota, who goes to a film school in New York that's ran by her favorite director, Ricky O'Neill. From there, part of the film school, there is a film competition where the winner of the competition gets a cash sum to turn their short film into a feature film. And during the program, the school is shut down because Ricky O'Neill, who runs the film school, is arrested for stealing from the students. So 7 months later, Millie's in a movie theater and back home in Fargo, North Dakota. She's going through her senior year of high school. She's watching The Coming of Attractions for a movie she's there to see. She looks up and sees a trailer that's a shot-for-shot remake of her short film, and it's her feature-length script. Ricky O'Neill has stolen it from her and has made the movie himself, and because of the way the school is set up, he can legally do that and doesn't have to give her any credit. She goes to him, she confronts him, but doesn't really get anywhere except for he gives her $20,000, essentially, in hush money to go away and not to go to the press. She takes that money, and she takes her film crew, and she turns them into a heist crew, and they make a plan to steal the movie 3 days before the premiere. So that's the plot of the book. It's suspenseful. It's funny. I have a background in filmmaking. I went to film school in New York. I lived in North Dakota for a while. I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota now. So there's a lot of things from my life that I took and channeled into this story. Millie is named after my grandmother. So just things like that. So really just kind of incorporated all of my background into this book. And right now it's available in hardcover, audiobook, and ebook.
Now I got to ask, why did you write a book like this instead of staying towards the nonfiction and stuff like that? Why did you pick this genre? What made it fit to you?
Yeah. So I don't think I've ever been interested in nonfiction as far as, I mean, I enjoy documentaries. I do read some memoirs. It's just not something, I've always been a fictional storyteller. Started in film, writing my own short scripts, and there was always humor involved in it. And not so much like action or violence or anything like that. And a lot of that has to do with what can you do with a very small budget on a student film, right? So making sure that it's something that comes off as authentic, but yet entertaining. That's always been my angle, I guess you could say, is those are the kind of stories that I like to make. Those are the kind of stories that I like to watch or to read about. About, was it 2024? 14 years ago, I think, 13 years ago, I decided that I wanted to make a shift from filmmaking and try my hand at novels. And that's something that I think I've always wanted to do since I was a young child. I've always enjoyed reading and writing. And I decided to try the novel format. And this is actually my third book that I wrote. The first two were what I like to think of like as practice novels, really just me kind of understanding the craft, what works, but more importantly, what doesn't work. And then really just kind of honing in on the kind of story that I wanted to tell. I love heist movies. I love coming of age stories. And this was just a nice combination that could utilize my background and to telling the kind of story that I would like to read.
To me, this kind of seems very realistic, where you have somebody that's new into this craft, the girl there that is trying to write a story, becomes really good, but she tells the wrong person, that person can go and steal it. So it's very realistic in that aspect. Is that kind of how you kind of looked at it, is could this really happen?
Well, I wanted there to be some kind of legality that Ricky gets to hide behind, right? I wanted there to be something as opposed to more of just, because you hear about this a lot where, people are accuse other people of stealing their ideas, of plagiarizing. The Oscars was 2 weeks ago, and I saw a headline about right before the Oscars came on that The Holdovers, which was, I can't remember if it was adapted script or original script, but it was nominated for an Oscar. And a couple of days before the event, there was a story that came out saying that the screenwriter of The Holdovers had plagiarized a lot of this other person's ideas. So that's nothing new. And I'm sure there's, going to be like comparing scripts, that kind of thing. I wanted it to be a little bit more cut and dry and kind of, number one, just for pacing, right? Everything that takes place, the majority, I should say, not everything, but the majority of everything that takes place in about 2 week span from when Millie finds out that her movie's been stolen to when it's supposed to come out. She's working on a very short timeline to orchestrate this heist. So I wanted there to be like a real final solution to him stealing the script, which is why I thought, okay, let's have this be part of a competition where she submits. She physically hands him or hands the school the script and says, this is what I'm submitting. And so he reads it and he makes the determination that since she's so young and she is very green when it comes to filmmaking, there's no way that she can do this story justice, but he can, and he's desperate for a hit. So I wanted there to be this kind of just, like I said, legalities in the play where he can do this. It's finalized. It's 100%. It's not like, is it plagiarized? Is it kind of my script? It's nope. It is your script. It's now mine, and there's nothing you can do about it. So then that way we can focus the rest of the story on Millie getting it back, as opposed to she could take him to court. She could do all these other things, but I didn't want that to be an option. I wanted the pulling off a heist, stealing the movie, was Millie's only solution, or at least how she saw it.
And sometimes that could be a catch-22 because if she tries to steal it, he could say it's his work of art and she's stealing it from me.
Well, so she steals it, but she's holding it for ransom. So the idea is not where she's gonna like take credits or anything for it, but she realizes, okay, well, he's not gonna give me proper credit for it. I could go to the press, but what's really gonna happen? But she feels, and her heist crew, which is her film crew, feel that they have been cheated out of not only the success of this movie, but future success, right? When you have a hit movie, there's other opportunities, other doors that open. And because she's not going to get any credit, those doors are going to remain closed. So she wants to be compensated for this, and why she asked for, I think it's like $3 million or something like that. So there is, he very well could say that, yes, she stole my movie, but he also doesn't know it's her until the exchange happens. So, there's a blackmail. He gets an anonymous email from her. So there's a lot of other aspects that are kind of going into play where it's not where I stole the movie back, now you have to give me credit. It's a little bit more kind of layered than that, and trying to, it's to get the compensation, but really Millie just wants him to be hurting financially and kind of his ego as well, because he stole something from her, so now she's going to steal something from him.
Now, what you said you wrote a couple of books before this. Have you ever
Yeah.
dealt with what's called writer's block, where you can't think of what you want to say and you get like a brain fart?
I mean, yeah, definitely. Like when it comes to the first draft of anything that I've written, I have a lot of ideas, and I have like a running document in my phone where I just literally put down ideas, and so I know what my next three books will be. And I have some ideas that'll only be that I think would make a better movie than an ever would book. So, if I ever get in a position where I could sell a script or, put that into a script, I'd also like to try a play. I have a couple stories that I think would really make really, really great plays. I think that's the kind of format. So I'm always very interested in what the story is, but then also what the best format to tell that story is. Now, that's not to say that, okay, I've got my story, I've got my outline, it's all just going to flow, right? The first draft is, I don't want to say I hate the first draft, but it is intimidating. It's kind of like, well, where would I start with this? Like, what can I do? Like, where do I hone in? And you're kind of figuring out a lot of aspects about your story in the first draft and what you want to focus on, what the themes are. And for me, it's just been just get the words on the page. It doesn't even necessarily matter if you're going to keep it, because you'll probably I overwrite. All of my first drafts are literally twice as long as the finished novels. So because I go down a lot of avenues and cut a lot of stuff, or I condense a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily make it, or doesn't make it in the initial format. So yeah, I mean, there definitely will be mornings, because I write in the morning, where I will stare at a brand new, it'll say chapter one or chapter 10, and I know what's gonna supposed to happen, but I don't know how to I don't know what the words are to use. I don't know what the emotions are to start with. I have to kind of see it, and a lot of times I'll just start writing. And then I'll get to a part, like a page or two in, where I'll be like, oh, this is actually where the chapter should start, is right here, but I had to kind of warm up to it. And I think that's okay, right? I have no problem with, as they say, kill your darlings, or cutting stuff out if it makes it if it makes the pacing stronger. I think pacing is vital to a good story, whether or not it's a novel or a movie or what have you, a song, right? Anything. It all comes down to pacing, right? Is feeling, that's how you control how you want the audience to respond. Is it something where everything's chaotic and happening in a hurry? Is it something that's, slow and somber and reflective, and we need to, take the time for the character to explore their emotions? And I think that can just be a challenge, because you'll start something, and then when you read the whole book or you read this section, you'll come back and say, well, this is weird. This chapter is like super funny and all over the place, and this is just like dire and drastic. And just, it's good to have that, that change, but it's too much, right? Or it's too sudden. And then that's why I like second and third drafts, because once you read the whole thing as a whole, you can go, okay, this is what my story is actually about. I thought it was this, but it's really about this. These are my themes. These are the things I want to focus on. And then you can cut out, the junk, basically, the stuff that's distracting from the story, and really focus. And then that's where you can look at the ebb and flow. Just like, somebody told me once, life's like a roller coaster, right? Up and down. But and that's how your story should be too, I
Now,
feel.
are you the type of person that writes from an outline, I guess you could say a spider web, where you have the main thing with all these different sections? Or are you like a Stephen King, where you just write, and like Stephen King, he doesn't say have an outline. He just continues to type, and whatever way his story goes, it goes.
Yeah, and that's so cool. I wish I could do that. I can't. I can't. Well, I haven't yet. I do like my outline, because for me, that's the outline is still the exploration. So I have a board, I have my note cards, and I before I even get started on that, I spend a lot of time with my main characters. I write biographies for them, backstories, what's their greatest fears, what's their sh most shameful secret. Just a lot of things that 99% of that will never make the book, but just things that I need to know about them. And then when I look at my outline, I approach it the same as I would a novel. It's just instead of writing a whole chapter, I write two to three sentences on a note card. And then I think about, what they would do next, or where the story could go. So, and then from there, that's when I do have my outline. I put it all on a board, and it's on my wall, and from there, I look at it. Now, but that doesn't mean it doesn't change, because it changes a lot. It changes as I'm writing each draft, and then even more so when I go from a first draft to a second draft. I'll look at at everything and say, okay, I'm running over. These are the sections that are long. How can I condense? How can I move forward? And how can I entice the reader more? But so yeah, I do work from an outline, but it's not, what's right, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not the Bible. It's not scripture, right? It can totally change. It's not sacred. It can move. And definitely there have been times where I thought was going to happen next, and I get to the end of a chapter, my character will say or do something, and I'll be like, oh no, I have to do this now, and then I end up having to adjust my timeline because of that, which is fine.
And there's people out there that write a book, and I'm not sure if you put up with this or not, but there's people out there that write a book and they say, oh, this book is crap, it's not going to be good. And Come to find out, it's awesome. And I bring up Stephen King. He did the same thing. His first book, he wrote it, finished it, and threw it away. His wife, Tabitha, came up to him, took the book out of the garbage, read the book, and she's like, yeah, this book is awesome. You should publish it. That book is one of his best sellers, Carrie. So you can't judge what you do. You might think it's crap. Somebody else might think it's the best work.
So I do know that story. I think it's a great story. I think Stephen King, one of my personal favorite books of all time. I love Stephen King. I absolutely love Stephen King. I don't write his kind of material, but and to be honest with you, a lot of times like the supernatural aspects, I'm really not that interested in it. Like, that's just not interesting to me. But his characters are so well developed. It's just, you just get so invested in them that that's why I think that he's the master of horror. Because even though, because there's this stuff happening that I think, normally maybe people wouldn't read or, because there's, see, Stephen King doesn't only have horror fans as readers, right? He can't. He's too popular. He has a lot of fans that maybe don't even read other horror movie horror novels, and I think that's because of his characters. So, but anyway, but I what I was getting to was so on writing his memoir is like top five books of all time for me. I absolutely love that book. I read it every couple of years. So he talks about that and about how his wife, suggested it. And I think they sent it to like about 30 publishers, if I'm remembering correctly, before they sold it. And my story is similar too. And I think there's a couple lessons that I take from that. Number one is just because one person doesn't like something, that doesn't mean that like you shouldn't take that to heart. There could be and probably is like a thousand other factors that are going into their decision for them not to buy your book that you don't even you have no idea and you never will. And you could really just drive yourself nuts wondering why somebody passed on you. Because, if it was meant to be, it'll happen. As far as writing or dismissing something that you wrote that you don't feel is ready, I think that just kind of depends upon what exactly it is. And so I'm coming at this from a point where I'm not Stephen King. I won't make that claim here today. But I know that my first two books, like I and the state they are in now, they're not at a place that's publishable. Now that I have a book published and I've gone through that process and I've learned about that stuff, I can see why. Could I go back and edit those two books and try to get them up for publication? I can. Am I going to? No. I don't honestly, like I like them. But I love taking the experience and the now, I learned a lot. I learned just as much, if not more, from writing two unpublished novels than I did getting my MFA. It's something where you have to be open to failing in order to succeed. That sounds like a really bad poster in a guidance office, but in a guidance counselor's office. But I really do believe you learn more from failure than you do from success. And I think as far as somebody saving a book, definitely it's easy to be critical on yourself, especially if you aren't getting the kind of attention that you want from publishers or agents. And I think, for me, like I have heard, hey, those first two books are great. You could go back, you could definitely get them published. And again, it's just like, well, but what do I want to spend my time on, working on those, getting them out there? I'd rather focus on other things. So, I think, it's such a cool story. And really what it means is, you really have to ask, like, does Stephen King actually really think that, Carrie was a bad book, or was he just so green and new that he lacked confidence in himself and his writing, to get it out there, and he just needed support. My wife is my biggest, cheerleader, my biggest support, and there's no way I would be doing this without her. So, very much I can believe that, something along the line, same thing with Stephen King and his wife.
Right. And one of the things that you talked about is failure and success. I mean, whether you're writing a book or just living life, it's not how many times you fall. It's how many times you get up after you fall. You could fail many times and you're not a failure until you refuse to get up that last time.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. That's how it works. I have a A lot of friends that I went through an MFA program with, they're fantastic writers, and they have really great books that are just sitting on their computers that, aren't finished, and for one reason or another. And, I just tell them it's never going to get published if you don't finish it. You have to, I mean that, and I'm not saying every book that, is finished, you're going to get published. Like I said, I have two that never will see that. But if you don't keep trying and don't keep, perfecting writing, it's very few of us that can just write something, perfect without learning, without, exploring the craft of writing and taking the failure and learning how to apply it to the next project.
Okay, Tyler, what was your first job?
My first job was I was a soccer linesman in first grade. So for $10 a game, I would run up and down the sidelines with a flag, and I'd wave the flag and I'd say which team kicked the ball out last. So I was first grade. What is that? I think that's eighth grade, 7 or 8. Yep, and I made $10 a game.
What's your favorite season?
I'm gonna say winter because I live in Minnesota and we only got snow like twice this year. It is, yeah, it's been very, very warm. Like usually in March, it's like negative 10, and on my wife's birthday in March, it was like 67 degrees out. So I miss it, and I think I'm kind of a homebody. I like being next to a big fire and reading, and also, winter is the best writing weather. You can look outside, it's cold, it's frigid, you're inside with a hot cup of coffee. Writing a book, that's cool. There's nothing better than that. So yeah, so I really like winter, and then everybody likes fall. Everybody likes pumpkin spice.
What's your favorite food?
Breakfast. I
Who
can't
is
go.
your
There's too many breakfasts to narrow it down.
hero?
My parents.
What is your favorite dessert?
Chocolate chip cookies.
What time do you wake up?
6 a.m.
What movie do you quote the most?
My favorite movie of all time is Back to the Future, but I probably quote Jurassic Park.
Are you a night in or are you a night out?
My night in.
Are you a thinker or are you a doer?
I'm a thinker.
Do you learn by watching or do you learn by doing?
By doing.
When you go swimming, do you tiptoe in or do you dive in?
Depends where I am. At the beach, that's the closest to me. It's more of a kind of closer tiptoe, get the water up to your belly button, and then grab your nose and dive in.
What's your guilty pleasure?
Oh my gosh, Farmer Wants a Wife. It's on Fox and it's ridiculous. My wife and I, like, we hadn't watched reality TV in maybe 15 years. I think the last reality TV I watched was like Bret Michaels' Rock of Love with my roommate being in college. We would, have a couple beers and watch that and just loved it. And last year we started watching Farmer Wants a Wife, which is where four farmers bring five city girls back to their farms and looking for love. And it's so silly and it's so stupid. And I honestly look forward to it every week.
What motivates you?
Defying expectations.
What is your deepest fear?
Oh boy, man, you're just cutting right down to it. Biggest fear. I mean, we could get really existential. There is no God. I'm not as well liked and charming as I think I am. I don't know. There's stuff along that lines, I guess. Dying alone. That sounds awful.
How do you want to be remembered?
As someone that was kind.
And on your gravestone, what is something you would want written for those that didn't know you to be like, oh, that was definitely Tyler?
Don't stand here.
Okay. And what do you care the most about?
My family.
Now, you being a filmwriter, I'm not sure if you know, but Back to the Future, Michael J. Fox was not the first
That's right.
actually actor.
Eric Stoltz was.
Eric Stoltz. And this is the thing, is you being a writer, Eric Stoltz was taken out because he was writing it as a tragedy. when Michael J. Fox came in and did it as a comedy. So it's the same still words, it's the same premises, but two actors can take it upon how they feel it is, even though it's the same script.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, so writers have intention, but that doesn't mean that's the outcome, right? Because we all accept the information that we're given and we process it differently. So, I've seen footage, I'm sure you have too, right? Of like shot for shot scenes from Back to the Future with Eric Stoltz, right? It's shot the exact same way that it was with Michael J. Fox. It's just Eric Stoltz is doing it different, right? He's playing the part differently. And I just think that has a lot to, it just comes down to like how you process information, and I think that's why, and this isn't to get like on a big thing, but when you talk about like banning books and different kind of stuff, I think it's just some people that aren't interpreting the message of the story the same way that others are. I just think there's misunderstanding, and I think if there was more open dialogue and communication and acceptance of other people's ideas, and that we could avoid, burning books, and we could do more of a maybe let's have a conversation around these books so we can see what the, what is the intent? What do we think the intent was? And how did it, actually make us feel?
And then one thing you did mention is you're sitting in Minnesota looking out the cold window, having a couple of cocoa. Why not turn that into and have you looking out and see a Yeti running by? You're in the snow mountains, he's coming after you or something like that. That could be a hell of a story right there. Come on. You
Well,
gotta do something. You gotta do something with that. Come on.
I'll hold on to the Yeti for sure.
So, is there? I'm going to give you a moment to talk
All
about
right.
whatever means the most to you. It could be your books, it could be family, it could be whatever means the most to you. I'll put you on the spot right now. This
Okay.
moment is yours.
All right. Well, I would just say, thank you again for the opportunity. I for those that are listening, I storytelling has been my main focus for over a decade now. It's been an incredible opportunity for me to have my first book out there in the world. I'm shopping my second one, but it's something where, I mean, I don't write full time. I write as much as a full-time writer would, but that's not my only job. I have what I quote, a day job. I work 40 hours a week. Writing is my passion, but it's not what's paying the bills right now. And I think, and I've been writing for over a decade doing both. So I guess my only thing is, since I have an open forum here, it's just if you're listening to this and you think, hey, I've always wanted to write a story or write a movie or I don't know, learn guitar or whatever it is, like just do it. I mean, just try it. I'm not saying it's going to be a success, but figure it out. If if it's something that you've always wanted to try and you've always had that just kind of nagging in the back of your mind that, could I do this? Would I be successful at this? Or just would I enjoy this? And, I think making sure that you enjoy something needs to be your primary factor when you're looking at, like a second job. I look at writing as my second job. And the thing is, like, yes, it's so cool and a dream come true that I've had my book come out. But honestly, I'd still be writing even if I didn't, even if I wasn't published. It's how I enjoy my time, my free time. Not all of it, of course, but a lot of it. And it's a passion of mine. And I think that's just what's important is life is short. Find something you're passionate about.
What do they say? Like playing guitar, writing, anything like that. It
Yeah.
takes 20 minutes a day. You practice 20 minutes a day. After a year, you'll be, I think it's 100 times better than what you started out with. All it
Sure.
takes is just that one little, just take it out and practice.
Yeah. Yeah,
So
if you don't do it, it's not going to happen.
that goes with anything. It goes with losing weight. It goes making yourself better. It takes that one little step and you can improve yourself big time. So Tyler Swanky, if people want to get a hold of you, are you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, websites? How do they go about getting a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm on everything. So you can look me up on Facebook. I have a an author page. My personal Instagram is on there, but I do share a lot of stuff about about my writing, book appearances, anything like that. If there's a sale going on that I know about. So my Instagram will be a lot of stuff about my writing and then dogs, because I just love dogs. And then, yeah, and I'm on Twitter as well, X, whatever you want to call it. Or you can just go to my website. It's just my name, tylerschwanke.com. And that has links to where you can purchase my books. But it's on BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, your local bookstore. Will either have it, and if they don't, they can order it for you. So it's very easy to obtain. And I do want to say one plug. If you really enjoy audiobooks, this one's a great one, because I have two phenomenal actors that really elevate the story. And the female narrator does a tremendous North Dakota accent for Millie's mom. It cracks me up every time I listen to it. So, but yeah, that's where you can find me. I'm out there. I'm not hiding.
Okay, again, this has been Tyler Swankey, and he is the author, filmmaker. The book he recently did is Breaking In.
I'm always looking for likes, shares, and reviews. Please give it a share and a review. 5 stars really does help. Thanks for tuning in. Yes, refill both of our coffees. See you next week, where we can listen once again. Please follow us on Saturday Java with Jason on Facebook and Instagram. And please follow me on Facebook at Jason Coffee Man.